From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, July 14th. Each week, this podcast explores news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in San Diego, California.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief, also in San Diego.
And this is one of those rare occasions where we actually do the podcast in the same room, which is pretty exciting. And we just left the first half of the plenary session of the ESRI 2009 International User Conference. And what we want to do today is share some of what we saw and our reactions to it. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Improve the performance of your web maps and make your authoritative data more broadly available with ArcGIS 931. For more information, visit www.esri.com/what's-new.
Okay, so we've just spent the morning, about 3 hours or so, listening to Jack Dangermond and some of his colleagues and some of his users share a vision of GIS. And what we've done is pulled out just a handful of things that struck us as interesting or different or valuable to think about. And let me start off with one that I noted sort of about halfway through the session this morning. And that's the fact that there was sort of no Steve Jobs moment. Nothing, Jack didn't pull something out of his pocket and say, here's something new. There were just one or two announcements of things we'd really not heard about before. But everything else had come out before the conference, either as a formal announcement from ESRI on a blog or in the very extensive Q&A that we talked about last week. And I suppose some people would be disappointed that there wasn't some big announcement that they could start tweeting about or get excited about. I think this is a really positive sign because there is nothing worse than coming to an event like this and just being overwhelmed by so many announcements and not being able to digest any of them. I think the fact that people had seen a lot about 9.3.1, had heard a lot about 9.4, had heard about ArcGIS Explorer 900, it made this a very comfortable kind of environment. And I think that's a really positive thing.
I would agree, and a lot of what we had heard, we had already reported on, probably some of which way back in February after I came back from the FedUC. I think people come here with their questions. Now that they know about what some of the new advances will be, some of the new functionality that will be put in 9.4, if they are already implementing 9.3.1, again, they're coming here prepared to ask questions. I think they're coming here prepared to make this a productive session. If they were blindsided by some of these announcements, you wouldn't have that feel. You would say, oh no, what do I need to do? I got to go back and ask my manager, what do I need? I think people come here prepared. I think that questionnaire that we reviewed last week allows people to get an understanding of what the company is doing with their technology, and now they're coming here better prepared to make it a productive work week.
So you agree that this is a really positive kind of thing?
Yeah, this is not a technology that has a lot of surprises left in it. It's more evolutionary, not revolutionary in the advances, especially with a company, again, like ESRI, which has so many different products, so many different things that they offer their users.
Why don't you share one of your observations?
Yeah, the conference vision, the kind of the overriding theme of the conference is called GIS Designing Our Future. And, you know, so many conferences have little buzzwords, little ways to try to make a theme. And what I want to try to do is get down a little bit under the covers. This whole area of what was called, or what Jack is calling geodesign, again, people may think it's a buzzword, but I really think that there is a bit more meaning to it. And you have to study the study some of what he's written. He had a whole big editorial article in the recent ARC News about what geodesign is, and what he's calling it is designed by geography. And again, you have to go a little bit deeper into what that truly means. And what he's trying to get at, what he's trying to force his users to do, is actually think more and plan more about their work processes. And really filters all the way back to the product development cycle. What is he putting into, what is the company putting into their products that allows the users to design, to analyze, and to come up with answers to very specific problems that are used every day. So whereas you think this is a cute little phrase, what he's trying to do is get thinking, people to think spatially, get them to use the tools in the product and to think about design in a way that helps people to plan, and what he says is more think about using geography in the future, think about future to do more maybe predictive analysis on the work that they're doing. So I think it's more than a buzzword, and as he says, it's an geodesign is an evolutionary step in our field. So I think that's what he's meaning, and I think you really have to study what he's thinking, not just accept it as a buzzword.
So I had the same reaction, that this really seemed like just a very light introduction to a much deeper way of thinking about using GIS within a workflow. And he referenced sort of a six-step process, I think that goes all the way back to Steinitz, that I think is really valuable to look at. And we'll put that reference to the ArcNews article in the show notes.
Yeah, he called it geodesign as a systematic methodology, extending GIS with tools that support creative design. Again, these seem like trite little phrases, but he's really trying to force people to get a little bit deeper into understanding what they do with the technology and do, you know, some really nifty things in helping people look forward with doing planning, with doing analysis, with the types of things that he expects his users to do with the software he's developed.
Right, because in fact we are part of this whole group of individuals and companies that are in fact changing the nature of the Earth in so many different ways, and we're sort of getting back to that. Now, from an ESRI vision standpoint, this is all very well within ESRI's long-term vision. I want to look at this idea of geodesign in the context of what's going on in geographic visualization across the industry. This is not putting dots on maps. This is planning to change the face of the Earth. And that's where the Microsofts and the Googles and the Yahoos are not going. They don't have that kind of depth. They're not selling that kind of... They're selling very much the, let's put the visualization out there and share it and have user-generated content, which is terrific. But this vision from ESRI is, again, saying we need to go beyond that. We've got a deeper, fuller... And we have far more to offer than just putting the dots on the map.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that he brought up in his slides, he says that the geodesign should consider all of the geographic questions. How do we describe geography? Speaking about a data inventory. How does geography operate? What he calls process models. Again, you got to think of what the process model is. It's more of a workflow. How do we alter geography? Using GIS to help with sustainability models. And how should geography be changed? Again, if you're a city planner and you're looking at a viewshed analysis of what a particular area will look like when you put a new building footprint in there, you're looking at the future, and that involves a whole backward step process of getting to that point where you've got to present new information to decision makers and then analyze that information more fully using the technology that's at your fingertips.
Right. Mark, you just outlined were four of the six steps that he referenced from Steinitz. The second topic I wanted to talk about was a couple of announcements that relate to specific functionality. And there were sort of two places that this popped up for me. One was in a discussion of what ESRI calls templates. I'm not sure that's really the best word for it. After the discussion, Jack Dangerman used terms like applications and best practices, and I think those are maybe better terms. These are basically little sample applications that you can download, and they come with some sample data, and you can see how it works. But the idea is that you're going to use these and populate them with your own data from your own geography and use them. And the ones that were shown were very, very practical. Everybody needs these. One was a tax parcel viewer, and the other was a tax parcel editor. Well, every local government across the world needs something like this. The other set of tools that I saw that struck me were in the image analysis space. And Lowry Jordan, who's now in charge of imagery within ESRI, went on to talk in great deal about some new tools. You keep your data in its raw form, and on the fly, you can do color balancing, ortho rectification, and pans sharpening. He also highlighted a series of other analytical tools that were now within the ArcGIS environment. Both those templates and all this new functionality within ArcGIS that has to do with imagery made me think of one thing, and that's the fact that these kinds of things are traditionally the kinds of things that ESRI third parties do and do very well. And now they're being pulled into the core, and they're sort of free. They come with. And it always makes me nervous when vendors wrap their arms around more and more of the things that the third parties did, because then those third parties, who are already in challenging times, basically being pushed aside even more, potentially.
Yeah, so he's walking a fairly fine line here. I think, to some degree, ESRI may be being pushed by their users to provide very quick workflows solutions. These may be people who come to GIS, relatively new people who need simple workflows. I think you said best practices. Because of the growth of the technology, because of the expansion and the need for these tools, I think what the company is trying to do is give the users jump starts. Give me these quick templates that I can populate my geodatabase very quickly and get started very quickly. I think years past, they used to put together these very elaborate workflows, these very elaborate, you know, used to have wall maps full of these templates for forestry and for tax mapping. Now they're saying, okay, here it is, here's just one small utility, take it and go, populate it, and get off the ground quickly.
But do you think there's some truth in what I said, that that's going to start eating into?
I think that's true. I think it probably will eat some of the third-party revenue. And so it's one of these things where you walk the fine line. What do I do to satisfy my users? I know I've got to have good business partners, and I know that they have to have their certain expertise, but I got to have a solution for users.
Right.
So it's one of those balancing acts.
Right, my sense is that there's been more of that within other vendors. I know Autodesk had a whole fleet of third-party developers for AutoCAD Map, and now they're, I don't know that I could name one if pressed.
Well, this is not an uncommon problem for companies these days.
No, but it feels like both of those examples that I gave made me feel like, oh, there's going to be a lot of nervous business partners.
Yeah, there may be, yeah. Let me look at some of the very specific things that are coming out in the 9.4 release that has to do with spatial analysis. In the opening morning presentation, a few new functions were described as coming into the new release, including fuzzy overlay modeling, improved map algebra integration, raster performance improvements, time-aware analysis, and something very specific for what was called ecological sampling tools. I think this is really a very important step to bring all of this into. It's kind of like bringing your users along in getting beyond visualization. I need to provide you with certain tools. I think time-aware analysis, or what people call temporal GIS, is a good example of that, which is I've got many, many layers of maps that have been acquired over time, and now I want to see some time sequence that shows me change detection, for example. It is a way now to integrate a variety of analyses. Could be temporal changes derived from a satellite image interpretation. It could be something done because the plans of a city have changed. And so this is a way to integrate the different types of map overlays, the different types of map analysis into a time sequence, and they provide a little tool to show users how they can step through on a time scale, which I thought was very neat. Some of the other spatial analysis tools that are being incorporated into ArcGIS 9.4 are location allocation models and gravity models. These are typically used in business applications. Some of these things had been very specific to business applications, but now they're kind of opening up to broader usage. And again, it's building in more functionality into their core product. If you still want very specific things for business analysis, I think that you'd have to go over to the ArcGIS Business Analyst product, but it's kind of like picking and choosing your best functions and dragging them back into the core product. But again, it's bringing the users along, not forcing them, but at least encouraging them to get deeper into the analysis part of their work processes.
Yeah, and maybe that is really one of the underlying themes that we're finding, is this concept of, let's put a little bit of everything in the big box that you're buying and really start to get you to use that beyond just making thematic maps and doing the kinds of things we've been doing for 40 years.
Yeah, but there's still a problem, and that is the old adage that in any product you only use 20% of the functionality, and this is just making it more chock full of stuff, and you could argue that it's becoming too crowded in there. But it's not unlike what any other company is doing to make their products better. It's just that I think here they've taken spatial analysis, you know, put a little bit on a pedestal and say, hey, look, use these tools. They're new, they're different, and give them a try.
My suspicion is the same as what we were saying before with the templates and the additional functionality within the imagery, and that's that I have to believe that the users are asking for this stuff.
Yeah, I would agree.
The last thing I want to talk about is the big list of goodies that are coming in 9.4 in this year, as in past years. John Calkins gave a rundown. This year there were only 9 and not 10, which may or may not be significant. But a couple of them knit together, I think, create an interesting observation, and that's the fact that the next version of ArcGIS 9.4, the operating system kinds of functions are moving into the desktop products. And let me give you some very specific examples. John showed a number of different ways that you can search for things within the ArcGIS desktop environment. He searched for tools. He searched for symbols. He searched for data. Instead of having to crank up ArcCatalog to add a new data set, ArcCatalog had its own window right within ArcMap. There were also a number of presentations that highlighted how Python is integrated right into ArcGIS. And all of those together, to me, are sort of signaling a change where the user, potentially a new user or even a very experienced user, doesn't really need to interact with the operating system at all. And that takes me back to 1992 when I was hired at ESRI and I was working on the ArcCAD team, and I was working with my boss, Matt Davis, who's now the head of ESRI Boston. And he explained to me that in AutoCAD users at that time, AutoCAD was their environment. They didn't even know that their computer had an operating system because that's where they lived 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And he was absolutely right. GIS users at that time, and maybe until very recently, really had to know an awful lot about the operating system. You moved data sets within the operating system. You did your queries. Back in the day, you'd start up ArcPlot at the command line in Unix. Now we've come full circle, and we're putting that kind of functionality back into the desktop. I think that's a really strong statement, and maybe we're coming back to that point where an ArcGIS user, that's going to be their environment for everything.
I think they want to break it so that you are in the same environment, and you don't have to break your thought process, and that just makes it easier all the way around.
Users will probably say that this is long overdue. So, yeah, kudos on that one. I think that's going to be very helpful.
The last thing we'll talk about is something that has, I think, gotten an awful lot of attention, not just at ESRI, but in other geospatial technology companies, and that's the idea of 3D GIS. I think with the advent of so much more data collection, such as LiDAR data, such as having new birds in the sky that can automatically generate data, 3D, the Z value, the Z value of topography, there is the need to better understand how you use a third dimension. And what ESRI is saying here is that in 9.4, it makes ArcGIS a complete 3D GIS, more faster visualization, support for 3D vector models, so the use of geometric analysis in 3D, and some integration of real-time video along with 3D editing. This, I think, is a new concept for a lot of GIS users. I don't think we've begun to learn how to think in 3D yet. I think we love to see the eye candy of 3D visualization, the extruded models of buildings and whatnot. Building information models are coming online hot and heavy with a lot of data behind them. And so here we go. Here we sit at kind of the beginning of 3D GIS, and a lot of companies are scrambling to build that in. Now, the big question is, are we ready for 3D GIS?
It's hard to say, but I do have to admit that I'm one of those people who, once the eye candy starts coming up, I start going to sleep because I can't connect it to real life. For the first time, with the demonstrations we saw today, I started to really get maybe what real 3D GIS is. And these were some really simple things. One of the examples they showed was using attributes to drive symbology. Well, we do that in 2D all the time. I mean, that's how we do thematic mapping. And okay, in 3D, and this just really struck me, street lights and the size of the 3D symbol, it's kind of like a half sphere of the power of the street light, how strong that the light was. That can be really valuable for public safety kinds of issues and a number of other things. I think ESRI is really starting to help its users go down the path of why they need this and the value that's there. One of the other examples showed creating a subway entrance and linking it in 3D, the above ground and the below ground. These are real things we have to model.
But is this any different than what Autodesk has been doing for several years with what the Bentley Integraph relationship has been? I'm not sure I see this as anything different. Maybe the integration of data types is better, but I'm not sure that I'm seeing anything revolutionary here.
What's revolutionary, I think, is that it's in the ArcGIS environment and there's a data model that supports it. It's as simple as that. Maybe it's not so different than taking a search functionality from an operating system and putting it into ArcGIS.
Right. Well, and I guess it's good, again, this is supposed to be a visionary presentation. They're just giving their users an idea of what's coming and what they ought to be prepared for and how to educate themselves into thinking more in 3D.
Well, and just the fact that Jack Dangerman got up there and said, we have true 3D, which is something that there's always been a lot of hemming and hawing, and it's 2.5D, and data models aren't there yet, and so forth. I thought he made a pretty strong statement just by coming out and saying that.
All right.
That's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that this year the ESRI International User Conference is more social than ever. Be part of the conversation by following along on Twitter at twitter.com/ESRIUC. You can also join the community on Facebook at the official ESRI UC page. To learn more about the ESRI User Conference, visit www.esri.com/UC. Directions Media also wants to encourage the use of social media during the User Conference, and we are running a contest to find the best tweet about this week's events. Any tweets tagged with the ESRI UC hashtag sent between Saturday, July 11th and Friday, July 17th are eligible to win a $100 American Express gift card. If you're not yet on Twitter, there are also alternative submission options, although the submissions are still linked to 140 characters. And we'll include the full rules in the show notes. Good luck. If you'd like to email us about this week's podcast or anything else, you can do so at editors@directionsmag.com. You can also leave a comment at All Points Blog or directionsmag.com.
And we're coming up on a deadline for the Location Intelligence Conference. Our call for papers ends on July 31st. We're also looking for panelists for two of our major sessions on cloud computing and on 2D versus 3D visualization. Again, you can write to us at info@locationintelligence.net to give us an idea of your interest.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.